Here is your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC still has the very best old-time radio on the live streaming. And if it's music you love, tune in to the RTC Music Channel, where this link and many others are on our website at oldtimeradiolisten.com. Now, here's Jim.
Thanks, Tim. Welcome back to the RTC Weekly Download. Jim Dolan here, your host. We're going back to the showcase again this week for an episode of Jack Benny. And this will also feature Mr. Zinn, who does an excellent impression of many people, including Jack Benny, Burns and Allen. His Red Skelton was great, too. Fantastic show. Want to remind you that if you have a chance to see him, you should certainly do that. And also, he has a CD. I don't have the information on it, but I'm sure you can look that up online. Great CD with all his full performances. He also does magic. Interesting. It's kind of like a ventriloquist, because on the radio, you know, you got Edgar Bergen, and you really couldn't tell listening to the radio what kind of a ventriloquist Edgar was, but it didn't matter because Charlie McCarthy was entertaining anyway. So this way, you know, magic act on the radio. Don't know how that works, but he does it. So check it out, Brad Zinn, and you might be pleasantly surprised. Well, anyway, subject of this week's program is the Jack Benny recreation, and we'll hear that right now.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Orson Welles. The management has asked me to remind you at this time that no flash photography is allowed during tonight's performance. And to avoid any impromptu additions to this evening's carefully rehearsed sound effects, I humbly ask that you switch off any electrical devices hiding in your pocket or purse. And now, ladies and gentlemen, it is my pleasure to introduce our director, Mr. Greg Oppenheimer.
To be introduced by Orson Welles. Is this on? Can you hear me? Okay, I've been asked to tell the people in the back, if you want to move up, that's quite all right. So there's a lot of empty seats closer up. Although when these actors come back down, they won't have a place to sit, but that's their problem. Long before my father created I Love Lucy, when he was 23 years old, in 1937, he worked for Jack Benny as a gag writer. And my favorite Jack Benny story is Jack went to lunch at the Brown Derby with Edgar Bergen. And as the waiter walked by their table, he heard Benny say, waiter, could we have a check, please? And he turns around and he says, Mr. Benny, I'm surprised to hear you asking for the check. And Benny says, so am I, and that's the last time I go to lunch with a ventriloquist. But my family, this is really family history tonight, but my family's connection with Jack Benny goes back a lot farther than 1937. In 1926, my favorite aunt, my great aunt, Ann Fisher, was the chief sales clerk in the ladies' hose and lingerie department at May Company in downtown L.A. And the junior clerk was an 18-year-old named Sadie Marks, who later changed her name to Mary Livingston. And the Orpheum Theater was across the street, and Jack was appearing there, and every day he would spend all day in the ladies' lingerie department. And Aunt Ann would not let him just hang around, so he said he had to buy something or he had to leave. So that's, you know, how my family, my favorite aunt, watched the courtship of Mary Livingston by Jack Benny, and also how Mary Livingston, when she was Sadie Marks, broke all the sales records of the May Company. It really is family history tonight, because after my dad worked for Jack Benny, he then went to write for Chase and Sanborn Hour, starring Edgar Bergen, Charlie McCarthy, and Judy Canova, who is the mother of Diana Canova, who will be starring in one of our shows later this evening. And so he wrote for Diana's mother, and I actually wrote something that Diana's going to do later tonight. But right now, we're going to do the Jack Benny program, and why don't we start?
The Jack Benny Program, presented by Lucky Strike.
Feeling low.
Feeling tense.
These eight words are common sense. Smoke a Lucky to feel your level best. Smoke a Lucky to feel your level best.
Millions of smokers are learning that Lucky's fine tobacco picks you up when you're low, calms you down when you're tense.
That's what fine tobacco can do for you. And
LSMFT. LSMFT.
Lucky Strike means fine tobacco.
Yes, puff by puff, pack by pack, you'll really enjoy this fine, light, naturally mild Lucky Strike tobacco. And you'll agree that Lucky's fine tobacco picks you up when you're low, calms you down when you're tense.
So smoke that smoke of fine tobacco, Lucky Strike, and get on the lucky level where you feel and do your level best.
Yes, smoke a Lucky to feel your level best.
Jack Benny with Mary Livingston, Phil Harris, Rochester, Dennis Day, and yours truly, Don Wilson. Ladies and gentlemen, for 16 years, I've been introducing the star of our show. And after all those years, you'd think that I'd run out of nice things to say about him. Well, I have. So here he is, Jack Benny.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. Hello again, this is Jack Benny talking, and Don, that wasn't a very nice introduction.
Well, I'm sorry, Jack, but after 16 years, I just couldn't think of anything new.
Oh, you couldn't, eh? Well, Don, I'm sure that if I were introducing you, I wouldn't have that trouble.
Oh, yes, you would, Jack. You've been saying the same things about me for years. Why, I'll bet you can't say anything that I haven't heard before.
Oh, yes, I can, Don.
What?
You're fired. And now, ladies and gentlemen,
Wait a minute, Jack. You're not serious, are you?
Well,
you can't fire me. After all, I've got a wife and three chins to support.
Don, stop worrying. You've been with me for 16 years, and I hope you're with me for... Oh, hello, Mary.
Oh, hello, Jack. Hello, Don.
Hello, Mary.
Oh, I'm sorry I'm late, but my car wouldn't start this morning, and I had to take the bus.
Oh, that's all right.
Well, say, Mary, if your car ever gives you trouble again, why don't you call on me? I'll drive you down. You've seen my new car, haven't you?
Yes, I have, Don. And on you, it looks good.
It certainly does. Oh, wait a minute. I understand you called me on the phone yesterday. What did you want?
Well, you always like to know when I get letters from my mother. And I got one yesterday. In fact, I brought it with me.
Oh, a letter from your mother, eh?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what does the Maw Kettle of Plainfield have to say?
Well, just a second, and I'll read it to you.
Okay.
My darling daughter, Mary, as you'll notice from the stationery, I'm writing from the Plainsfield Hotel. The reason we're here is because 3 days ago, we shut the house up and had it fumigated on account of the pests. Well, we got rid of them, all except your Uncle Lou and Cousin Willie.
Well, it's about time.
We really are going absolutely...
Your mother didn't start off very funny, incidentally, Mary. Go ahead, Mary.
Well, we really don't mind Willie. He's a very, very lovely brother. He spends all his time down in the basement with his printing press, and he's no bother. He has to work night and day because he's the biggest competitor in the United States government. Anyway, Mary dear, I kind of like Willie because he's so sweet and thoughtful. Every Mother's Day, he gives me a $10 bill with my picture on it.
Well, I guess I was right in the first place.
Now, for a paragraph or two about your sister, Babe.
Ah, good. This is the part I like.
Well, since the warm weather is here, your sister Babe got herself one of those new French bathing suits. Oh, she tried it on yesterday, and I haven't seen so much of Babe since the doctor said it was a girl. However, she's very happy with the suit, and next month she's entering a swimming contest.
A contest? Gee, I didn't even know she could swim.
Oh, sure, Jack. Babe is a regular mermaid.
Well, I've noticed the resemblance, except the wrong half looks like a fish. I'm funnier than your mother today. Continue with the letter, Mary.
Okay. And Mary, dear, you'll be happy to know that Babe is also taking dancing lessons from Arthur Murray.
Well.
She got a swell deal, too. He teaches her dancing, and she fixes his plumbing.
I knew she could do it. You know, Mary, your mother writes some of the funniest letters I've ever heard.
Oh, she certainly does, Mary. They're loaded with laughs.
Yeah, they're a scream.
Oh, hello, Dennis. When did you come in?
When they found out that Mary's sister Babe was a girl.
Oh, then you missed the start of the letter. Would you like me to read it to you?
Oh, no. I'll hear it on tonight's rebroadcast.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
By the way, Dennis, you were off the program last week. Was anything wrong?
Oh, no, Mary. Mr. Benny gave me a week off so I could go for a little vacation. Boy, I sure enjoyed myself. I went fishing on Lake Mead.
Well, how was the fishing, Dennis?
Oh, it was wonderful, and boy, was I lucky.
Well, what did you catch?
4 trout, 3 perch, 5 bass, and a high-button shoe.
A high-button shoe?
Yeah, but it was too small, so I had to throw it back.
Oh, fine. He caught a shoe.
You ought to see the hip boot that got away.
Oh, quiet.
I wish I could get away to do a little fishing. That's one of my favorite sports.
Fishing?
Yeah. Oh, what a thrill it is to hook a silvery rainbow trout, one of nature's loveliest creations. What a sight as it breaks the water in a shimmering shower of glistening drops and the sunlight reflecting on its iridescent beauty.
Look how he describes a fish. Me, he can't say anything nice about.
Jack, what are you talking about?
Nothing, nothing.
Say, Dennis, how long were you at Lake Mead?
Oh, we were there for a whole week, and I spent my whole time out on the boat.
A whole week on the boat?
Avast, ye landlubbers! Larboard the starboard and drop the anchor!
Look, Dennis...
Shiver me timbers and man the pumps or we'll all drown like rats!
Dennis, that's enough!
Ahoy, me hearties! Batten down the Barton and poopin' down the poop deck!
Batten the Barton? What happened to Durston and Osborne? Now, Dennis, that's enough. Do you hear me?
Stow the talk, Mr. Christian, or I'll swing you from the highest yardarm of the British fleet.
Ah, for heaven's sakes. Mary, you see what you can do with him. That kid drives
Dennis,
me nuts.
Dennis, Jack is right. Why don't you
Let
just...
Let the men mutiny, my lass, and don't worry. The ship may be rocking and pitching, but I'll sail it through the hurricane, or I'll...
Dennis, what's the matter?
I'm feeling seasick.
Good, good. Hold it a second, Popeye. I just remembered when I got here there was a message for me to call Rochester. I better do it before I forget. It may be important.
St. Mabel.
What is it, Gertrude?
Mr. Benny's line is flashing.
Yeah. I wonder what Collier's cover girl wants now.
I let him wait.
Say, Gertrude, I saw you come in with a lot of packages. Were you shopping?
Yeah, and my feet are killing me. But it's my own fault for buying such small shoes.
Well, what size did you get?
9.
Oh, for heaven's sakes.
Well, what's the matter?
Getting your feet in a size 9 shoe is like docking the Queen Mary in a lily cup.
Well, look who's talking. Get a load of your shoes.
They ain't so big.
They're not. Last year, when we went on our vacation, every hotel we stopped at pasted labels on them.
Well, it's a natural mistake because my shoes are genuine cowhide.
Cowhide?
Yeah.
And from the way your toes stick out, it looks like milking time.
Gertrude, the next time you talk to me like that, I tell you, I'm just going to slip.
Operator! Operator!
Yes, Mr. Benny.
Well, it's about time. Didn't you hear me buzzing, Gertrude?
Yes, but I've only got two hands.
Well, congratulations. Now, if it isn't asking too much, will you ring my house?
Yes, sir. You know, Mabel, I never saw a man like Mr. Benny. He has such a split personality. On the radio, he's one type of person. And in real life, he's an entirely different type of person.
Yeah, and I don't like either one of them.
I know what you mean. That man is such a pest. Every time we're out together, all he wants to do is go up on Mulholland Drive and look down at the lights of the city.
Well, that's romantic.
Romantic nothing. He owns stock in the electric company. Oh, how he hates daylight savings.
Operator, did you get my house?
Yeah, but the line is busy. I'll call you later.
Thank you. I couldn't get Rochester, Dennis, but anyway, now that you've had a chance to get the salt water out of your veins, it's time for our play.
Aye, aye, sir.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, for our feature attraction tonight, we are going to do our version of that Warner Brothers picture, The Treasure of the Sierra Madre. And I'd better cast it right now. I, of course, will play the leading role.
Of course.
Certainly. Listen, I'll give a performance that will simply...
Okay, folks, you're all in clover, because Harris is here, and the lull is over. So, lay it on me. Yeah, lay it
Phil,
right on me.
Phil,
yeah.
Why do you always have to come in here and ask the audience to applaud?
Well, I ain't going to get no laughs with the jokes you give me. And I want to hear some kind of noise.
Well, you've got no right to complain about the jokes. You get as many laughs on this program as I do.
That's what I mean. I want to hear some kind of noise. Applaud me, folks.
Phil! Phil!
All right. I'll read the stuff that's written here, but I... thought a little ad-libbing would liven things. Oh, hiya, Liv.
Well, hello, Phil. How are Alice and the children?
Oh, fine, Liv, fine. Just left them. You know, this being the first day of May, I drove them over to the park for a big May party.
A May party?
Yeah. You should see all them kids. They look so cute as they danced all around me.
Danced around you? Didn't they have a maypole?
Yeah. But I was prettier.
Let me sit down with you, Dennis. I'm seasick, too. Phil, you know, between you and Remley, I've never seen two worse...
Wait a minute, Jackson. Hold it, Dad.
What?
Just a minute, bud. I don't care what you say about me, but don't pick on Remley.
Phil, just calm down.
Yeah, what's wrong?
Well, I may as well tell you why I've always tried to protect Remley.
What?
Well, you see, I promised Frankie's poor old mother that I'd always look after him.
Oh, when was that?
When she threw him out of the house.
Hmm.
I don't like to brag, Jackson, but I've taken pretty good care of Frankie during all these years.
By the way, Phil, it's none of my business... but how much do you pay Frankie?
Well, I don't give him no regular salary. I just take care of his needs, like room, board, and bail.
Oh, fine.
Say, Jackson, before I go, there was something I wanted to ask you about. Oh, yeah. Last week, you told me you were going to buy a new car. Now, what kind did you get?
I didn't get any, Phil, but I may get a new one this summer.
Well, look now. Be sure you get one of the new models. that comes equipped with a Dynaflex Super Flowing Unijet Turbo Vasculator, which is synchro meshed with a multi-coil hydrotension duo vacuum dynamometer.
Phil, that was amazing. I mean, how'd you ever say that?
A Harvard man fixes my teeth. Well, I gotta be leaving. So long, kids.
So long, Phil.
Hey, folks, I'm leaving. You wanna throw just one more on me before I go?
Phil, get out of here. Oh, boy, what a character.
You know, Jack, I think Phil is conceited.
Conceited? Mary, you should have heard the things he told me yesterday while I was giving him a Tony. Now, where were we?
Well, you were casting the play we're going to do.
Oh, yes, the treasurer of the Sierra Madre. Now, Don, you're going to be my partner when we go hunting for gold. And Dennis, you're going to be the old prospector, the part that was played by Walter Houston. And let's see, where's Mel Blanc?
Here I am, Jack.
Folks, it's Mel Blanc. Give him a big hand.
Well, Jack, we're all going to be in the play. Why did you just give him applause?
Well, Mary, I have to. It's in his contract.
You mean you give him money and applause, too?
No money, just applause. It's amazing, you know, how much you can save when you've got a lot of hams working for you. Now, Mel, you're going to be the bartender and also the leader of the Mexican bandits. And, yes, Dennis, besides being the old prospector, you'll come in later as one of the bandits.
Gee, two parts. It's hard to believe that I can sing, too.
Yeah. And now, ladies and gentlemen, for our version of Warner Brothers' thrilling adventure story, The Treasure of the Sierra Madre.
As our scene opens, it is a hot, humid, sultry day, and a lonely, hungry, penniless American is roaming the streets of Tampico, Mexico.
Walking. That's all I've been doing for two whole days, walking. No place to sleep, nothing to eat, nothing to drink. Well, I'll see what I can do in this saloon. Gee, this place is crowded. Hey, bartender.
Si, senor, what will you have?
Give me three fingers.
Three fingers of what?
Just three fingers. I'm hungry. Give me three fingers of anything. If I don't get something to eat pretty soon, I'll go crazy.
Well, hiya, big boy.
Huh?
Good to see an American down here. Even though you do need a shave and your clothes are torn, you look like a derelict. What's the matter?
It's a long story. I used to be a famous radio comedian. I had a big house, a swimming pool, and everything. Then all of a sudden, I'm a bum.
Well, what happened?
Television.
Television? What's that?
I don't know, but the wrestlers have all the good writers now. Anyway, let's not talk about me. What's a girl like you doing way down here in Mexico?
Well, I work in the Tampico branch of the May Company.
They have a branch in Mexico?
Yeah. I'm in the Jose department.
That's better than your mother's letter. Now, look, sister, how about you and me?
Hey, Bogey, I've been looking all over town for you.
Well, who's your friend?
That's my partner, Curtin, Sam Curtin. He and I came down here looking for gold.
Yeah, gold. Every time I think of it, I go crazy. Gold, gold. I can see it now. There it is! It's mine! Gold!
Put that back! That's my pivot tooth! You know, sister, he goes crazy every time he thinks about gold.
Well, that doesn't gold mean anything to you?
Yuck! I can take it or love it. I mean, leave it.
Well, if you boys are interested in looking for gold, there's an old prospector around here who knows every foot of the Sierra Madre. If you can get him to go with you, you'll strike it rich.
Where does the old prospector live?
Well, you can't miss it. You go right down Flamingo Road.
Flamingo Road, Flamingo Road, Flamingo Road.
Are you stuttering?
No, but I promised Warner Brothers I'd mention it three times. Come on, Curtin, let's go. Hey, Curtin, this must be the house where the old prospector lives.
Yeah. Knock on the door.
Okay.
Howdy, bub.
Hello, old-timer. My name is Humphrey Bogey. What's yours?
Titus Houston.
Oh, well, we heard that you know all about the gold in the Sierra Madre, and we thought maybe you'd come up into the mountains with us.
Sorry, son, but I'm way too old for that now. There was a time I used to go into them hills and stay for months at a time.
Yeah?
But then it would get to me. I was only human, you know. I'd have to come back and be back in town with a load full of gold, and a couple of nights I'd blow it all.
Women, eh?
No, Kleenex. I got hay fever.
Oh, well, look, old-timer, if you won't go with us, maybe you can tell us where we can find the gold.
Sure. Here's a map of old Mexico. See, you can't go wrong. You take the main road through Tampico till you pass El Paso. After you pass El Paso, you go through El Fruo and turn left at El Lefto.
What if we turn El Righto?
Oh, that's El Rongo.
Oh, and is that where the gold is?
Oh, no. That's where you buy your burros.
Burros?
Yep. There's a place right on the corner, Madman Hernandez.
And he'll sell them to us?
Yep, but you have to be awful careful and carry a lot of water for them.
Why?
Hernandez wanted to make his burrows look like new Buicks, so he cut three holes in each side.
Oh. Well, we got to be getting along, old-timer. You sure you don't want to come with us?
No, but I'll see you later.
You will?
Yep, come back in page 12 as a Mexican bandito.
Oh. Well, come on, Curtin, let's go.
Oh, what's the matter, Bogey? You look unhappy.
Well, why shouldn't I be? We've got the map. We know where the gold is, but we can't get it because we don't have any money to buy equipment.
Oh, senor. Senor.
Huh?
In there, in the saloon, there's a telephone call for you. In there, for you, in the saloon, in there,
huh?
For you,
for me,
in there.
Is it an important call? Gee, an important call.
For you.
A telephone call from me. Who could it be? I'm 2,000 miles away from home. Well, I might as well find out. Come on, Curtin. Now, wait for me at the bar, Curtin. I'll answer the phone.
Okay.
Hello? Yes, speaking. Huh? Oh, sure, I can answer that. The Pilgrims landed at Plymouth Rock in 1620. Thank you. Goodbye. Hey, Curtin.
What's up?
We've got the burros, the picks, the shovels, the sleeping bags, and a refrigerator.
Where did you get them?
That phone call. I just won them on a quiz program. Tacos or leave it.
Good. Now let's go and find that gold.
All right, but before we go, I want to buy drinks for the house. Okay, everybody, the drinks are on me. You know, Curtin, we've been digging in these mountains for weeks, but it was worth it. We've got 10 sacks of gold.
Yeah, 10 more sacks, and Then we'll...
Wait a minute. Look, coming up the trail. Mexican bandits. Curtin, quick, take out your gun.
But I haven't got a gun.
What? What did you say, Curtin?
I haven't got a gun.
Now that's ridiculous. Who ever heard of a curtain without a rod?
Oh.
Thank you.
Quiet. Here they come now.
Oh, yes. Look, Curtin, they're getting off their horses. They're walking this way. Well, we'll just have to try to bluff them. Hey, you, come here. Are you a Mexican bandit?
Si.
I suppose your men are tough.
Si.
I guess they would kill us at the drop of a hat.
Si.
What's your name?
Si.
Si?
Si.
Now look, Si, we don't have anything you want. We're hunters. That's all we are.
You do not fool me. You have some gold and we want it. If you don't give it to us, we will kill you.
Look, me and my partner, we've been out here in these mountains for 3 months. Yeah, we found some gold, but don't take all of it. Let us keep half. That's a fair proposition, isn't it? We'll give you half.
I will talk it over with my lieutenant. Oh, Henry! Henry Sierra!
Coming, madre. What is it, El Capitan?
The gentlemen here with the gold have made a proposition.
Si? What is it?
Estas personas dicen que si no los matamos, ellos no darán la mitad del oro.
Oh, my God. Si los matamos, tendremos mejores después.
What did he say? What did he say?
He said you better give us the gold because these 8 guns make common sense.
What?
When these guns are smoking, you ain't so lucky.
Oh. No, bandidos, please. Don't shoot us. We'll give you the gold.
El Capitan, if we take the gold, we will need a burro.
Si. We will take the little burro. He is equipped with a Dynaflex Superflowing Unijet Turbovasculator, which is synchromeshed with a multi-coil hydrotension durovacuum dynamometer.
Look, bandits, take our gold, take our burros, but don't kill us.
I will tell you what I will do, senor. I give you a fighting chance. Here is a weapon for you and a weapon for me.
What?
You count to 10 and may the best hombre win.
All right. I'll count to 10. 1, 2, 3. Not yet. 4, 5, 6. Ooh! Wait a minute. 7, 8. Ooh! You're cheating. 9, 10. You missed me. That's better.
Oh, Bogey. When he started shooting, why didn't you shoot back?
I couldn't. He gave me a knife. Goodbye, Curtin.
Back in just a moment.
Feeling low.
Feeling tense.
These 8 words are common sense. Smoke a lucky to feel your level best. Smoke a lucky to feel your level best.
To feel your level best, smoke a Lucky, for it's a fact that Lucky's fine tobacco picks you up when you're low, calms you down when you're tense.
It's important to know that fine tobacco can do this for you, and Lucky Strike means fine tobacco. Yes?
L-S-M-F-T. L-S-M-F-T.
Lucky Strike means fine tobacco. Yes, Lucky Strike means fine tobacco. Light, ripe, naturally mild tobacco.
No wonder more independent tobacco experts, auctioneers, buyers, and warehousemen smoke Lucky Strike regularly than the next 2 leading brands combined.
So when you choose your cigarette, remember Lucky's fine tobacco picks you up when you're low, calms you when you're down, when you're tense, put you on the right level to feel and do your level best.
Yes, be sure to make your next carton of cigarettes Lucky Strike.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, this concludes another program, and we'll be with you again next Sunday night when we'll
Jack.
What?
While you were doing the sketch, a wire came for you from Humphrey Bogart.
A wire came for me from Humphrey Bogart?
Yes.
Well, read it to me.
This wire you don't read. You twist it around your neck.
Oh. Well, ladies and gentlemen, good night, folks.
The Jack Benny program is written by George Balzer, Sam Perrin, Milt Josephsburg, and John Tackerberry. Our cast featured Brad Zinn as Jack Benny.
Margaret O'Brien as Mary Livingston.
Stuffy Singer as Dennis Day.
John Jensen as Don Wilson.
Tommy Cook as Phil Harris. Yay!
Brian Hendrickson as Mel Blanc.
Ivan Curry as Mr. Kitzel.
Jen Olivier as Gertrude the Operator.
Beverly Washburn as Mabel the Operator.
Our Lucky Strike announcers were Ivan Curry and Dave Selving.
Our Lucky Strike jingle singers were Phil Proctor, Kirby Proctor, Kirby Taylor, and Monica Chilton.
Live music was performed by Chad Rinney.
Live sound effects were produced by Bruce Johnson.
Recorded sound cues were played by Steve Stewart.
Our sound engineer was Jack Taylor.
Tonight's performance was produced and directed by Greg Oppenheimer.
This program is copyright 2019 by REPS, the radio enthusiasts of Puget Sound. Randy Clausen speaking.
And this is Eliana Muller for the REPS Radio Network, asking you to stay tuned for the Bickersons, which follows almost immediately.
That was good stuff, and I hope you enjoyed it. Well, we're going to leave Showcase now because we have a little extra time, so we're going to play an episode of Imagine That. This is from 1940, and it's called Bits of Bread.
The ancient Greeks never used napkins.
A man loses a job through mistaken identity.
The man who broke the bank in Monte Carlo really lived.
Can you imagine that? This is Lindsay McCarry, ladies and gentlemen, and my gang and I are with you once more to delve into the dusty tomes of ancient annals and the yellowing pages of newspapers to bring you another series of amazing facts. We'll be on the air with the first one in just a minute and a half, so stick around. And now we're ready to present our first item on this session of Can You Imagine That? Let's see what pops up first. Well, here's a juicy little item from the etiquette books of antiquity. If you had been invited to dine at the home of any of the better class of people of ancient Greece, you wouldn't have found a napkin by your place. No, no napkin. But you would have found small pieces of bread with which you could wipe up a drop or two from a dripping pomegranate or overripe olive. The old Greeks used these little bits of bread exactly the way we use napkins today. The only difference was that in those days they didn't save them nor put them into napkin rings for the next meal. Instead, they just dropped them onto the floor where some of the household pets would pick them up and eat them. And maybe the Greeks had a word for that, too.
Beware the Ides of March. Beware the Ides of March.
That's what the soothsayer said to Julius Caesar. But Can You Imagine That says to you,
beware of mistaken identity.
Must you have a reason? All right, here it is. This little incident happened in 1881 in Burlington, Iowa. On the previous day in January, the legislature had just convened, and the town was rapidly filling with office holders and office seekers. Up in front of one of the leading hotels drove an imposing carriage.
Here you are, sir.
Very well. Here's a dime for your trouble. Just put my trunk on the veranda. I'll carry my portmanteau.
Yes, sir.
A room, please, with bath.
Yes, sir. Register, please. Thank you. Now, shall I have a porter bring your trunk up, sir?
No, I'll find a porter myself.
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir. Your valise will be in your room.
You there?
Yes?
Sir, if you please.
Yes, sir.
My trunk is right here on the veranda. Bring it up to my room.
Oh, right away, sir.
Of course, right away. Room 36.
Yes, sir.
Come. Oh. All right. Now, what do you charge for your services?
25 cents, please.
Very well. Here.
Oh. Thank you, sir.
Now, do you know Governor Grimes when you see him?
Oh, very well, sir.
Good. Give him my card and tell him I want an interview at his earliest convenience.
Oh.
Well, why are you staring at that card?
Is this your name?
Of course it's my name.
Permit me. I am Governor Grimes. At your service, sir.
You? You are Governor Grimes? Oh, my dear sir, I beg of you, please excuse me. A thousand...
Perfectly all right, young man. You may have your interview right this minute.
Oh, thank you, sir.
Yes. I received your letter of application and I was much impressed by it. I thought you would be well suited to the position you applied for, but, sir, you have just given me a mock quarter worth just 20 cents and not 25 cents. Any man who would cheat a working man out of a measly 5 cents would cheat the public treasury out of much more if he had the chance.
Oh, but Your Excellency,
that is all. Good evening.
Remember that passage from the 16th chapter of Proverbs?
Pride goeth before destruction, and an haughty spirit before a fall.
In these days when hundreds of thousands of persons are carried at tremendous speed every year throughout the entire world in airplanes, we may forget the intrepid spirits who first took flight in the air. More than 160 years ago, on October 15, 1778, Jean-François Pialtre climbed into a small basket to which he had attached a smoke-filled bag. He had with him a small smoking stove, which kept the bag above him inflated. At last, everything was ready, and Pialtre gave the signal to cut the ropes holding his strange contraption to the ground. As the last line was severed, this true pioneer of aviation arose and floated in his little basket over his native city of Metz, France. A salute, then, to Jean-François Pialtre, the first human to take flight in a balloon. 15 years later, on September 19, 1783, Joseph Montgomery was a bit more cautious. Instead of going up himself in his balloon, he sent aloft three passengers who, when the balloon had descended, were discovered to be alive and well. No record is available of their emotional reactions, for those three passengers were a sheep, a duck, and a rooster. Can you imagine that? Well, most of you, of course, have heard at one time or another the famous old song, The Man Who Broke the Bank at Monte Carlo. But did you ever know that the inspiration of that song was not at all the figment of the imagination of Fred Gilbert who wrote it? No, sir. It's an actual fact. There was a man who broke the bank at Monte Carlo. It was in 1891 in the tiny principality of Monaco that one day the son of the founder of Monte Carlo, now operating the casino, Camille Blanc, called one of his oldest and most expert croupiers into the dismal basement office.
Sit down, Castaigne.
Oui, Monsieur Blanc.
Well, he is coming at last.
Really? Who?
This Englishman, Charles H. Wells.
Ah! So he has been fortunate in England. But, well, no one is forever lucky in Monte Carlo. You remember what your revered father used to say? Red wins sometimes. Black wins sometimes. But Blanc always.
Ah, tiens, yes, I know. But I am fearful, Castaigne. This Monsieur Wells has been too fortunate. He has won too much in several financial ventures. Now he may do the same here. I appoint you grand chef de parti. You will stand by him wherever he is while in the casino. Watch him carefully. Report to me if you notice the slightest indication of trickery. You understand?
Oui, monsieur. I will watch him.
A few days later, Charles H. Wells arrived in Monte Carlo, registered in one of the luxurious hotels, and subsequently made his nonchalantly confident way to the spacious casino. But they were ready for him, or so they thought.
Bonjour, Monsieur Wells, and welcome to the Casino Monte Carlo.
Yes, thank you. Thank you so much. Will you take me to a roulette table, please?
At once, Monsieur. This way, please.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Ah, here's an excellent table, Monsieur. Emile is one of our most expert croupiers.
Good.
Place your wagers, please.
I put 750 francs on the double
number 10 black, please.
The maximum on number 5.
The maximum, Monsieur?
Emile, Monsieur has said the maximum.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Number 5.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Now, the same.
Well, and on went the luck of the amazing Mr. Wells. Around and around spun Dame Fortune's wheel, and always did Mr. Wells win. Whenever he appeared, the croupiers fell into a fit of consternation. His fame sped around the casino until the number of bettors placing wagers on the same number Wells selected had to be limited, greatly to the obvious annoyance of those eliminated. Camille Blanc was so certain that the Englishman's winnings must be the result of some sort of fraud that he set 10 of his best spies to watch Wells night and day. But never could they discover any evidence of collusion. Wells's astounding good fortune was sheer luck. He had no system and played numbers all over the felt-covered table. At last, a few months later, he left Monaco to return to England. But the notoriety that his visit had brought to the casino sent thousands of avid gamblers to the tables. Thousands from all over the world who were bent upon emulating the success of the famed man who broke the bank at Monte Carlo. If Wells had broken the bank 50 times, the advertising would have been worth the cost. At length, Wells returned, repeated his former success for a time, and then...
Number 9 on the red.
I will too. Number 9 on the red.
All wagers in. Wagers closed.
Number 6, black.
I'll still play 9 on the red.
Yes, so will I. Number 9. I will stay with number 9 too, yes.
Number 10, black.
Well, no matter. I shall still play number 9.
For the last time I will play number 9. I do it.
Number 5, black.
And Charles H. Wells kept on losing. His luck had changed. He turned to his old favorite number 5, lost again, and again, and again. And one day, as the grand chef de partie reported to Camille Blanc that the Englishman had suddenly disappeared, the casino's owner laughed softly as he seemed to hear the spirit of his father, old Francois Blanc, founder of the resort, whisper to him,
"He who breaks the bank today will be broken by the bank tomorrow."
I've just got here through Paris from the sunny southern shore. I to Monte Carlo went just to raise my winner's rent. Dame Fortune smiled upon me as she'd never done before. And I've now such lots of money, I'm a gent. Yes, I've now such lots of money, I'm a gent.
As I walked along the path, along with an independent air, you can hear the girls declare, he must be a millionaire. You can hear them sigh and wish to die. You can see them wink the other eye at the man who broke the
stay indoors till after lunch, and then my daily walk to the great triumphal arch is one grand triumphal march, observed by each observer with the keenness of a hawk. I'm a mass of money, linen, silk, and starch. I'm a mass of money, linen, silk, and starch.
As I walked along the path, along with an independent air, you can hear the girls declare, he must be a millionaire. You can hear them sigh and wish to die. You can see them wink the other eye at the man who broke the bank at Monte Carlo. As I walked along the path, along with an independent air, you can hear the girls declare, he must be a millionaire. You can hear them sigh and wish to die. You can see them wink the other eye at the man that broke the bank at Monte Carlo.
And there you have it, another session of Can You Imagine That? This is Lindsay McCary reminding you that we'll be back again on this same station very soon with another batch of odd facts and hidden human interest news stories. And until then, it's goodbye now.
That's it for this week. We'll be back next week with more old-time radio. I hope you can join us then. Till then, this is Jim Dolan thanking you for listening.